Welcome to the Provider Podcast. I'm Adam Brimelow. Today, we're continuing our series with health leaders who have a big idea to deliver lasting change for the NHS, its staff and patients. In a moment, we'll hear from Jagtar Singh, Chair at Coventry and Warwickshire Partnership NHS Trust, who has a plan to tackle inequality. He draws on a long leadership career with the fire service and the NHS and has some compelling ideas with examples of what's worked to address this challenge. As you'll hear, he speaks with great passion and insight on the need to step up progress and the opportunities for trust to help deliver change as system working takes root. I hope you enjoy it. So, Jag, you've stormed Whitehall and single-handedly seized the citadel of power, overseeing health and care for a day. You now have it in your power to put in place one big lasting change that can bolster the NHS, help patients, support staff, and really make a difference to our communities. So reveal all, please. What is the big idea?
I think the big idea is to focus on avoidable and preventable inequalities. Once you've defined that, then you have to expand a little bit. What do you mean by avoidable and preventable? I would be expanding it into avoidable and preventable health inequalities and avoidable and preventable inequalities that our staff face. Once you've got the big idea out there, then it's how do you make this idea happen? It's okay having a vision, but you need that vision to be translated into actions and those actions to be deliverable in outcomes. Some of those outcomes need to be fast and quick so people gain confidence that this will work. And you've only given me a day to start the work. So my first day will be get the vision bought into. And I think that'd be quick to get people to buy into the vision because people often talk about inequalities.
Yeah, so it is a very big idea. And to be honest, I think we both know that this is something that the NHS is already striving for. But clearly, from your point of view, it's not working, or it's certainly not working sufficiently well.
I agree. The NHS has been struggling with this for many, many years. And we're struggling with it for a number of reasons. Our role is very complex, particularly in the patient-facing side. On the staff-facing side, I think we do have a good handle on reducing inequalities. So let me focus on the staff side. On the staff side, a lot of hard work's gone into producing tools that help us to find the data that we can turn into get better decision-making. So often the NHS is full of data, but nobody can find their way through the woods. So the data in inequalities, the one that everybody gets when I do my CQC inspections is, guess what? Workforce race equality standard. And sometimes that pleases me and sometimes it frustrates me because it is inequality is not just about race. It is multiple. Although race is the one area that transcends across the nine protected characteristics. So the res is an area where we can say the big idea, avoidable and preventable, was looked at, data was produced, and the very good trust and have now managed to bring their inequalities for disciplines down, disproportionate promotion to shortlisting down, board diversity, which then helps you to bring the lived experience into board decision-making, improved. Those three key areas have been improved, but not as well as we would have wished. But those that have done it can actually demonstrate how they've reduced the avoidable and preventable inequalities. In my trust, the last three appointments have all been diverse board directors at the board level. Their lived experience helped us through COVID to realise and to target our interventions at the avoidable and preventable harm that was happening to our communities that were vaccine hesitant. We also took the learning from the fire service, which said that the greatest deaths in fire occur in certain postcodes. And we were able to focus some of that. I was also able to use that knowledge with the NHS Assembly and pass that on to the NHS Assembly, NHS England. So eventually, I didn't get it straight away because that's what was a difficult task, start to target the vaccination programme into mosques, into Sikh temples, into the postcodes that had the greatest harm. So other tools on staff, just to finish that, workforce disability standard, gender pay gap, EDS 2022. These tools help us to identify the avoidable and preventable, help us to benchmark against like organisations, and therefore we can then measure our progress.
So it strikes me that in terms of getting this aspiration to stick, one of the key ingredients is diversity in leadership. And that seems to drive the sorts of changes that you're wishing to see, and which indeed many people have been trying to implement over a long period.
You're spot on, but I always put a caveat there. A diverse board can be just as bad as a non-diverse board. Just look at the diversity of the current cabinet. Are they really focusing on inequalities? No, they're not. They're almost the same as previous. I've also worked with Warrington University Hospital. When they started their journey, they were all whiteboard. But the diversity they had was a diversity of thought. They wanted to make a big difference across all the protected characteristics. So whilst I agree, if you've got people with lived experience from different protected characteristics on your board, that lived experience can be used to reduce inequalities because they're going to bring the knowledge and experience that they've had, the knowledge and experience of their families, and the knowledge of their communities. And they, again, I'll just go back to the easy example, which is under COVID. Before COVID vaccinations were even thought about, the Black and Caribbean community had WhatsApp messages into their personal accounts saying, don't volunteer for the vaccine programs. Remember what happened the last time. So there was a massive negative campaign. We knew about it in My Trust. We were able to deal with it in My Trust through webinars, bringing experts. But what I didn't manage to do quickly was to persuade NHS England and others that this was a really serious task until it became a little too late and we were then on the back foot. But we did do something. If you remember, NHS England brought in Lenny Henry, brought in the Goodness Gracious Meets characters, and they really did go for it then. But I just wish that I'd been more influential. So I'll hold myself to account on that.
Joe, you talk about the importance of bringing to bear lived experience. I just wonder how, in terms of your experience in the NHS, in the fire service, and in your own life, how your lived experience has impacted on your thinking in terms of identifying this as the key one idea that must be picked up and run with.
I'm going to go back to my lived experience in the fire service, how that helped. So we knew the fire deaths were occurring in certain postcodes. We knew that within the BAME community, there were multiple households, so there's more likelihood of multiple fires. So we worked on those communities by going into the schools, by going into the English second language classes and promoting fire safety. Also, my personal experience and my faith, which is Sikhism, meant that during Diwali, I knew the greatest risk was candle fires. And one case study where I was playing cricket for the West Midlands Fire Service cricket team and the fire investigation officer was also playing. He said, Jack, we had a really strange fire the other day in Handsworth. And I said, what was it? He said, the fire occurred in the bathroom. There was absolutely no source. I said, it was Handsworth. And last week was Diwali. And so people would have been putting candles in the windows and around the house as a mark of the tradition. He says, I didn't realise that. He went back and he asked the householders and found out candles were the cause. Now, we also know that in Leicester, one family member at 6 o'clock in the morning going to his market stall, lit some candles too close to a curtain and the family perished. because there was a person in Leicester Fire and Rescue Service who was from an Asian background, it was identified quickly. The community quickly rose up to address the issue, and they brought about candle safety messages. And one of the things they even devised was candles that were on a light bulb, one of those little light bulbs. They also devised a diva, which is the receptacle that holds the candle. So you put the candle in the diva, therefore when it burns down, it can't touch anything. And that one incident, if you go back to Leicester now, you'll find that community is so aware of candle safety. We need to have the same case studies, the same stories around reducing harm, whether that be with diabetes, whether that would be with heart conditions, whether that be autism or mental health. We need those stories.
Yeah, and that's a great example, Jack, of the sort of particular interventions that can make a difference. If I could ask you to just step back for a moment when we talk about inequalities, particularly health inequalities, then there's obviously a need to look beyond health and care to the wider determinants of health. So people's education, their housing, their diet, their work opportunities. I'm just wondering, as you sit at the top of that citadel in charge of health and care, is that really enough to tackle this problem? Doesn't it need something bigger, a wider solution to be put in place?
Well, my really big idea is to have a ministry for prevention. And the Minister for Prevention would work across all the government departments. Because if you've got a Minister for Prevention, bring housing in, bring education in, bring the NHS in, bring the police force in, bring fire in. That can make a massive difference. Where's the case study that tells you that? The case study for that 30-odd years ago in Staffordshire, the fire officer brought together those multiple groups of people. They got the data, and they called them the £1 million families. These were families that were costing the system £1 million a year. There were high unemployment rates, high truancy rates, high likelihood of fire, high criminal activity, all those things. By working with those families, getting them back to work, getting the fire safety sorted, getting the other factors sorted, they were able to make significant savings. And I know that work through Marmot and others has been repeated in other cities. But that just demonstrates when you've got cross-government, cross-public sector and private sector organisations work together, you can make a difference. I was very fortunate to be on a common purpose course in 1993. And there was a partnership game where you had to work with the private sector to get your big idea across. So the big idea at the time was, if you sprinkler high-risk buildings as occupancies, like multiple households that we're talking about, nobody will ever die in that building. It comes from Plano, Texas in the States. And I was able to persuade BT and a housing association to fund it, and we put in the very first house with sprinklers. That house has never had a major fire, never had death. But that idea has been spreading over the years. Not far enough. We still should be having all our schools sprinkled, and they're not being sprinkled. So I think we just translate these small ideas into big actions and cross it. We've got a phenomenal opportunity, Adam, with the ICBs. If the ICBs become that partnership and collaboration organisation, which is where the vision came from, rather than organisations that take a pseudo CQC route, take a pseudo NHSE management oversight route, or a commissioning role. Those three are not the priority for me. The priority for me for the ICBs is prevention and collaboration.
Is that what you see happening on the ground? You talk about that great opportunity for that prevention agenda. You've set up your Ministry of Prevention, and meanwhile, the work on closer to the ground is happening through ICSs. Do you see that opportunity being taken now?
I think if you talk to Rob Webster and some of those fast adopters of the partnership collaboration ideas, they are happening. But there are others who are still transactional. There are others who are still the guardians and they are the barons of their own territories. That is what we've got to try to avoid. And it's happened before. It happened with fire when fire tried to do partnership collaboration control rooms. Millions of pounds were wasted and the project never took hold because it wasn't owned from the grassroots. We've got to own the ICS, ICBs from the grassroots. We've got to grab the idea and we've got to show the benefits. The other big idea you've heard me talk about NHS Providers Board is to convince the Treasury you're not throwing money away at the NHS. Every £1 you give to the NHS brings back £4 to you as the Treasury. And these prevention ideas can actually bring back £10. And I'll give you an example of how I've done that myself. My Director of Operations, Sonia Gardner, came to me and said, Jack, we need a vehicle to get our nurses out into the streets to look after the homeless. I said, why do you need that? And she told me the reason, so we could give them health and wellbeing checks, physical checks, we can feed them and they can have a shower. So what's that going to do? It's going to prevent an A&E attendance. It's going to prevent an ambulance attendance. It's going to prevent a GP attendance. All those things I can't predict today, but in 12 months, 3 years' time, there'll be a factor where I can say, I invested £30,000 in a vehicle that's brought back to the NHS capacity to do £300,000 more work. That's given the Treasury, I don't know how much money, because people, those homeless people are now in accommodation, going to work, paying taxes, buying goods. That's the big thing that we are unable to capture in the NHS.
Jagtar Singh, thank you for sharing your big idea with the Provider Podcast. So that's it. But before we go, I'd like to ask, are you a leader in health and care with a big idea to make a lasting difference for the NHS? If so, we'd love to hear from you. If this series has made you think about the changes you'd like to make, do drop us a line at digital@nhsproviders.org and we'll put you in charge of all of health and care for a day to do as you wish. So I hope you enjoyed this edition of the Provider Podcast. We'll be back soon. And a reminder, you can join in the conversation by following us on Twitter and LinkedIn at NHS Providers with the hashtag The Provider Podcast, and keep up to date on future episodes by subscribing to the podcast. Thank you.